Hey, it's Nancy, and it's officially here. The Maker's Mindset Accelerator is now live. So if you're building a brand or even thinking about launching one, this is the roadmap I wish I had when I was starting out. It's a self-paced program packed with expert guidance, real-world strategies, and the tools you need to move your business forward faster. And right now, we're offering a special early bird bonus for the first group to enroll. So go to makersmindset.com/accelerator to claim your spot and get started today.
I mean, that must have felt like exciting, but also hugely disappointing at the same time to lose out on so much business.
That's exactly how it felt. It felt rewarding and disappointing all at the same time. As I said, we were just going with the flow to see if this was a business that people were excited about. And once we realized that, wow, we have global reach right now, especially with social media at that time, it was so much easier to talk to customers.
Welcome to Maker's Mindset, an interview series that goes beyond the surface to explore the personal journeys of female founders and change makers. Each episode unlocks an inside glimpse into the building blocks behind their success, from their most challenging moments to the daily habits that keep them grounded. This series is all about inspiring and enlightening through the lens of entrepreneurial storytelling and personal reflection on cultivating a life well lived. In this episode, I'm in conversation with Seema Bansal-Shada, co-founder of Venus A. Fleur. Seema is the dynamic co-founder of the luxury floral brand that has reimagined the art of gifting with their signature preserved roses. Seema founded her company with her husband, Sunny Shada, in 2015, sparked by a Valentine's Day mishap. Venus A. Fleur's iconic Eternity Roses, which are guaranteed to last a year, have garnered global acclaim and an impressive customer base. And under Seema's visionary leadership, the brand has been featured in major publications like Vogue, Forbes, and Harper's Bazaar, establishing the brand as a luxury favorite. As a co-founder, Seema continues to guide the brand's growth and shape its vision for transforming special moments into cherished experiences. Let's go ahead and jump in. Welcome, Seema. Thank you so much for being in studio with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's some big news. I know that your company, Venus A. Fleur, just turned 8, so almost 10. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been a wild ride.
It has been. And I know our audience is going to be so curious to learn more about your journey and what got you interested in the world of luxury preserved flowers.
Yeah, so it started with an experience, a bad floral experience. My husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, very new boyfriend, sent me flowers on Valentine's Day. We were living between two different countries. He was living in the city and I was living in Vancouver. And he did a ton of research to find me flowers that were going to, you know, create this beautiful gesture. And what I received wasn't what he ordered. So it sparked this, you know, conversation about the floral industry and how non-transparent it is. And usually most florists, you know, they go through a broker system. So you don't really know who's making your floral arrangement. And we were like, well, maybe we should, you know, create something that is a what you see is what you get, have a branded experience, something that people are excited to share and receive and show off. So that's what sparked Venus A. Fleur.
Well, it's really incredible because I feel like some of the most amazing companies weren't necessarily, you know, new industry creations. It was taking something and just making it better, making it more interesting, making it so much more unique. And I feel like that's exactly what you did with your company, which is so inspiring.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. I think, you know, when you have a personal experience that doesn't necessarily go in the best direction, like that is the way you're going to innovate from your own experiences.
And it's interesting because so many people have ideas and they find these white space opportunities, but they just don't know where to start. Like, how did you even go about finding a manufacturer and finding the people that you needed to connect with to make this all happen?
I had a really interesting journey growing up. I worked for my family, you know, 13, 14. So I worked for my dad at his plumbing and lighting store. And I learned a lot, but he had us do a lot of ordering, understanding the manufacturing process and design process. So I had some contacts for packaging that we did for our faucets. My family also owns a manufacturing plant in Canada. So it was just funny. Sunny and I were talking about things that we could take on because we decided to do this business together.
Right. And Sunny's your husband.
He's my husband, yeah. But at the time was my very new boyfriend. He took on like the more operational role and I took on this design role. Mm. And I was like, well, I actually know a manufacturer that can make beautiful packaging for us. He started working on sourcing flowers and I had a logo done within 3 days. I had my first order in 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
From our initial experience, because we were just so excited about this idea, but also to impress each other about what we knew.
Right, right.
So it was just a very funny experience and led us to where we are today.
Completely. And you said another thing that was like really interesting, like as you were sort of like divvying up the responsibilities, what you were going to do versus Sunny was going to do, it seemed like you tapped into each of your strengths. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. He is very technical, has a ton of operational experience, and he's very savvy with all that sort of stuff. But I'm very creative. In the beginning, when we started the company, it was just Sunny and I. He would literally do deliveries all the way to Connecticut if we would get an order.
Oh my gosh.
From Manhattan, we'd wake up 5 a.m., go get our flowers. I'd make them. Sometimes I'd jump on a subway to do a delivery. If he was out doing deliveries, like we were just doing what we could.
I mean, it's such a bonding experience too. Like how did those early days of like running a business with your significant other, like how do you think that ultimately shaped where you both got to today?
We have the same vision in mind. Our goal is to make this company as successful as possible, but enjoy ourselves. Yeah. You know, through the process. When it doesn't feel fun, that's when we're going to have those conversations.
Right.
But we truly respect each other. And that's what makes our relationship so beautiful. Because without respect, you will never have a strong relationship with anyone. Mm-hmm. But I think in your marriage, that's so important. And not overriding someone's thought process, you know, listening through it and then giving your feedback after, I think is so important, especially in a marriage and in a co-founder relationship.
Completely. And I feel like there are a lot of couples that either think about starting a business together or they do start a business together. But I feel like sometimes there's a little like apprehension about like, oh my gosh, is this business going to be like the thing that ultimately like separates us? And are there any other practices or agreements that you have together that makes it work as well as it does?
Yeah, I think we collaborate when we need to, but we really stay in our own lanes.
Yeah.
Of course, especially in my role where I'm doing the product development, marketing, brand facing, everyone has something to say in that regard. Everyone wants to give their opinion. But, you know, we really do respect each other. So we've always said this, we'll collaborate when we need to on certain things. We can give each other feedback, but we'll never override each other. That rule from the beginning was what set us apart. And that's the advice I'd give to another couple or co-founder relationship, because you really cannot overstep each other. Also, you shouldn't do the same job, because that's where trouble really starts.
Yeah. And for me, like I didn't have a co-founder, but you know, in the early days, I was doing everything for my company. I was even doing the things that I wasn't so good at. And I feel like if you continue to do that on the over the long term, you actually sacrifice a lot of your potential. Like I think part of the strength as an entrepreneur is like creating that team around you, whether it's employees or a co-founder, so that you can do the things that you're great at, because that's what makes the company special and successful.
Absolutely. I think your team is everything. You really need to invest into your team, hire subject matter experts that can actually help you, you know, grow those departments where you may not have the experience. And it's true. You really can't do everything. You should do some things very well and have others help you, because it takes a village with anything, motherhood, businesses, anything in your life takes a village and you need to support that village.
I mean, it's so crazy that you went from like idea and like roughly 6 months later had this business up and running. It seems like it was this smooth sailing operation. but there must have been challenges. Like, what were some of the early obstacles that maybe even made you sort of like doubt whether or not this business could be like a viable thing?
Absolutely. I moved to New York when I was 23 to be with Sunny, but also so that we could, you know, figure out this business was even going to make sense. And we wanted to launch in the city. So I moved into a flex apartment in Midtown. I don't know if you know what a flex apartment is, where they put a wall up.
Oh, yeah.
So that was my first apartment and we would make the arrangements there. We didn't know if we were going to get orders. You know, we thought it was a great idea. Our friends all thought it was cool, but they also thought we were nuts. My parents basically told me that if I was going to move, that I wasn't going to get anything from them. And that was the risk I was willing to take because I truly believed in myself and I really believed in the idea. Mm-hmm. But there were challenges, absolutely. Yeah. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. We don't have experience in the floral industry. Every day was its own day, right, and we were just going with the flow. We brought on, in the early days, one designer and one customer service person, and that took us 1 year of the operation. And Sunny and I just kept reinvesting every dollar back into the business. Mm-hmm. Any order we'd get, I'm no joke, Sunny would go and deliver it. Wow. And if we got an order to Baltimore, he would be like, okay, I'm going to drive to Baltimore and then I'll go to Connecticut after, drop this arrangement. Like, we would plan out our day. And the reason why we were taking on orders so far apart was to see if this actually was a business that people were excited about.
Right. So you didn't want to invest too much in infrastructure before you really had the confidence, like, wow, this could be something bigger.
Right. And if we had a customer, we wanted to service that customer. Mm-hmm. So we were willing to do really anything at that time.
So you earlier talked about the fact that you took a more conservative approach to scaling your company. I mean, Sunny was hand delivering a lot of these arrangements. At what point did you feel like, okay, we actually have a viable business here? It's time to scale. And what did that look like?
Yeah. So we had our first Valentine's Day in 2016. That was the one that we had bought inventory for. We had maybe two or three designers, a couple of drivers ready to go. And we thought, okay, we can do a couple hand deliveries through New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, kind of the boroughs, the tri-state area. And to our surprise, we had an outpour of customers. We also had an incredible, exciting experience. The Kardashians, we had sent their family flowers just so that they could see the flowers. Yeah. Never in a million years did I ever think they were going to post them, but they did. And our site was unclickable. Like, we had to put everything sold out because the orders were coming in so quickly. We just did not set up the website for this enormous amount of growth. So as I said, we had bought enough to sustain our tri-state area business and some of the international orders that we were taking on as well. And we couldn't take on anymore.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that must have felt exciting, but also hugely disappointing at the same time to lose out on so much business.
Absolutely. That's exactly how it felt. It felt rewarding and disappointing all at the same time. But that led us to hire a supply chain director right away to really understand how to plan better and clean up the operations infrastructure, bring on an operations manager, because the real issue was our operations.
Yeah.
That was not cleaned up.
And it's so funny because, you know, whether in beauty or in your business, a lot of people see the front end, they see the product, the exciting marketing, the branding, but they don't realize how critical the back end is so important to driving a successful business. And even for us, it's like, you know, I always get asked the question, you know, when did you know that you needed to hire XYZ? Oh, you know, like, your business will tell you when it's time to start building that infrastructure.
If it's not a well-oiled machine, it will break down just like a car will. Yeah. And I think that for us, as I said, we were just going with the flow to see if this was a business that people were excited about. And once we realized that, wow, we have global reach right now, especially with social media at that time, it was so much easier to talk to customers. We saw this insane demand and incredible growth really early on. And I'm so grateful for that. It taught us so much early on. And, you know, with the flowers as well. We, with the planning, with the marketing, with how to speak to a customer, we had to really hone in and put together a proper business plan at that
point. Right, exactly. And were you putting together a business plan because you just wanted to kind of get your vision more sort of, you know, strategically aligned with the company, or were you doing it because you felt like, wow, we may need to start fundraising to scale this business?
I think it was important for us to put it down on paper and really understand who is our customer, who are we speaking to? What do we want to be in 5 years? What do we want to be in 10 years? And it was an exercise that Sunny and I and Sunny's brother, Nick, who joined early on, worked through. We actually have never fundraised. We're fully bootstrapped business. We just reinvest back into the company. We always want to be smart with anything that we take on and what we're going to do with it. So it's been something I've been apprehensive about.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, what do you think not having investors involved in the business has allowed you to do that maybe would have been a lot harder having that involvement?
It allows you to remain creative and try things that maybe you wouldn't if you had a board. We've absolutely made mistakes. We've had a lot of learnings, but I think they have helped us get to where we are today.
Yeah.
For us, it's always been, let's try something. At least let's try it once. Let's see if it does anything for us.
Completely. I mean, I feel the same way. A lot of people don't know this, but I bootstrapped my company for the first 6 years before bringing on a private equity investor. And the types of like things that I would do and ideas and just random things to test and learn, I definitely felt a lot more comfortable doing that without having investors involved.
Absolutely.
But I will tell you, it was some of those crazy ideas and risks that I took that actually got the business to a place of like real momentum.
Right.
Yeah.
It's your belief in the business.
Exactly. Completely. Earlier, you talked about this big moment with the Kardashians and how that really kicked you up a notch. And one of the really cool things about your brand is that it has this luxury appeal, but it's also accessible, which I think is really important for the type of product that you have. How do you cultivate that? How do you maintain luxury while also creating a brand that is attainable and accessible to your customer base?
It is so important that we have accessible price points. So we've developed many collections that do have an entry price point, but it is a taste of the brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, especially for our brand, to continuously have this accessible experience into the world of Venus Hayflair. But we also, what's very important to us is to lead with design and quality. And every single piece of ours is handmade, from the florals being picked to the vessels being made and the designers physically putting everything together. We are a full manufacturing business because we actually do everything from start to finish. That is the reason why our prices are more expensive on the higher end side, because there is so much craftsmanship that goes into it.
So you obviously are celebrating 8 years this year, but you also recently launched a new collection, the Perennial Collection, which is a new home assortment for the brand. How does that fit in with your vision for Venus Hayflair?
So we launched our home line after 2 years of development. Mm-hmm. We were really inspired by florals, of course. We wanted this first adaptation to showcase florals, but not necessarily have to have flowers in it. This could be decor that our customers can place next to their Venus Hayflair flowers. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we thought that this would make sense is because our customers were naturally putting our products next to home decor. Mm-hmm. And why not add that to our assortment and to create a new category?
That's amazing. And I always tell, you know, entrepreneurs how important it is to really understand your customer and to constantly be, you know, listening and observing what they're doing, because that's where some of the best ideas come from.
Absolutely.
And I think this whole collection is a true testament to that. I mean, you were just seeing how, you know, your customers were positioning their arrangements and it led to this idea. And earlier you talked about when you were younger, I think you worked in your dad's business doing little different things. And I do feel like so much of what inspires who we are the things that we see growing up. And I'm just curious to know, like, you know, your dad being an entrepreneur, how did that impact your vision and who you are today?
I am so inspired by my dad. He came to Canada with, I know this is the immigrant story, but truly came to Canada with nothing, maybe like $200 in his pocket, and worked three different jobs, one as like a welding assistant, one as like a plumber. Like he did many different things. And his dream was to start his own business. So he initially started like a electric store where you could buy like tiny little parts. But his dream was bigger. He wanted to do more like design focused products. Mm-hmm. And he got into the world of design bathware. Seeing his journey, how hard he worked to provide for my family, the belief that he had in himself as well, to be one of the only South Asian men at the time really paving the way for such a large influx of South Asians to come to Vancouver at the time.
That's so incredible. And I actually have like a very similar story. My mom was a physician and a chemist, and she had a private practice. And the waiting room was always full. She always had patients. She just had this very busy business. And she was so confident, even just like as a Black woman doing something that not a lot of people like her were doing at the time. And I feel like subconsciously for me, it just gave me this confidence that even being a woman, being a Black woman didn't matter. Like I could do it. And I think those experiences are just so powerful.
Absolutely. Even you're so inspiring to me as well. Like everything you've built and the charisma and the grit, and the determination that you have. It's incredibly inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. This is a topic I'm really passionate about, which is health and wellness. Because as busy entrepreneurs, we put so many things off to focus and nourish our baby, our business. But for me, focusing on wellness and creating my routines has actually made me a better entrepreneur. And I'm just curious to know how you think about wellness, how you fit it into your schedule, and what's been your priority.
I think wellness is such an important priority, and you should make that a priority, especially if you're an entrepreneur, if you're honestly doing anything.
Yeah.
It's really important to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. whether that's mental, physical, it is important.
Yeah.
I love reformer Pilates. Mm-hmm. So I try to do that twice a week with a trainer or in a class setting. That is where I have great ideas, but also I just have time to myself and I like a more slow resistance training workout. I also think it's important to go for walks. I live right by the water. I just love it. Love walking and mindfulness practices like manifestation and journaling. I think for me, that's gone a very long way and it's helped me get really in tune with my own desires.
Completely. I'm a big walker too. And it's actually so funny. Like every entrepreneur I speak to is all about walking. And I try to get creative too. Like some of my meetings, I will not do on Zoom. I'll do audio only just so I can fit in that walk.
That's so
but
smart.
I just, yeah.
I'm I like, love that.
Because otherwise, it's like sometimes I do. I'm like, wow, I'm actually prioritizing this meeting with this person over like getting my exercise in. And I'm like, there needs to be like a happy medium here.
Absolutely.
So I definitely follow you on IG. I love your IG. I know you travel a ton. And I'm a big proponent of vacation. And I know in the beginning, it was so hard for me to like mentally take a vacation because I felt like I was prioritizing like fun over my business. How do you think about taking time off? Why is that important to you? And do you feel like it actually helps you creatively with your business?
I think travel is one of the most important experiences that you can have, and you should travel as much as you can, as often as you can, if possible. Mm-hmm. When we started Venus, Sunny and I also were in a relationship. So it's super important that we have time for our relationship as well. It was the most important priority that we found time for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And usually it was going on vacation mm-hmm. and turning off. And I would come up with the best ideas mm-hmm. while turning off because there was no Slacks or emails, questions coming to me. Someone was handling that for us. Mm-hmm. And at that time, that's when I would have the best ideas. I think traveling just
Yeah,
rejuvenates
your soul. Did you ever feel guilty though about it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially early on. I still sometimes do, but I think that's something that you need to work on within yourself. More of a mindfulness practice that like everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that this is only going to help you when you're back because you're going to come back refreshed.
Yeah.
You won't be burnt out and you're going to give more to your team,
exactly.
A better version of yourself to your team.
Yeah.
And you're going to get more done. If you're burnt out, you're just there.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Exactly.
But I'm also curious too, because you're a new mom, you have an 18-month-year-old, right?
I have a 15-month-old.
15-month-old,
yeah. How has that changed just your life in general as an entrepreneur? What is it like being a mom and running this company?
You know, I've had this conversation a ton recently. I think no matter what, Venus A. Fleur will always be my first baby. Mm-hmm. But now I have my amazing Windsor that I love with every ounce of me.
I love that name too, by the way.
Thank it's you. And I think it's important that I show up for myself, for my business. And when I do spend time with Windsor, mm-hmm. it's time for us.
Yeah.
And I think it's important he sees me working mm-hmm. and sees the hard work that goes into the life that he has.
Yeah.
I think it's going to make him into a really great man one day.
Completely.
But I do feel guilty. I think it's a hard balance. You're never going to feel like you're giving your all to anything. And that's a really challenging place to be in. But I think that every single woman, every single mom I speak to always feels that way mm-hmm. because we're almost like we're ingrained to think that we aren't doing enough.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I talked to some moms too that say, wow, I got like this new surge of inspiration because it's not just about me anymore, but it's about this little one. And it's like totally kind of given me that like kick in the butt that I needed.
Absolutely. You need to show up for them, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. be the best version of yourself you possibly can because they're watching.
Completely.
They're truly watching you. So if you're not working out, you're not doing the things for your health, they're watching.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not being productive with your time, they're watching. So be the best version of yourself you possibly can because your kids are watching and they're going to emulate everything you do.
So as we close out, we talked a lot about resiliency and we know that that is just so key to running a successful business. And I know that we're going to have a lot of listeners and watchers hearing about your story. They're aspiring entrepreneurs. What's one piece of advice that you would give someone starting out on their journey?
I think you need to believe in yourself. And I know I've talked about that a ton today, but the power of belief in your dreams is more powerful than anything you can possibly think of. Mm-hmm. You need to believe in yourself. Otherwise, no one else will. And I just feel like as kind of cheesy as it sounds, it's the most important piece of advice I can give to anyone, mm-hmm. whether you're starting a business or any new project. If you don't believe in it wholeheartedly, it's not going to transpire to what it can be.
Completely. Like it's almost like that belief is like this energy that like fuels the journey, right?
Absolutely.
And it has to be clear. It has to be real and authentic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So obviously this has been a wild year, 8 years plus the launch of your new collection, but I'm sure you're still thinking about the future. How do you think about the future and what's next for you?
There is so much left to do with mm-hmm. Venus A. Fleur. Like I don't even think we've scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. There's a huge amount of opportunity. I truly believe we've disrupted this industry and we have a lot more disruption to do. And I think that follows with category expansion, more lifestyle focused products mm-hmm. and experiences. We're not stopping anytime soon.
We are going to transition now into one of my favorite parts of this segment, which is 5 fire facts. So I'm going to ask you a few things about yourself and whatever comes to mind. First up, favorite wellness modality?
Pilates.
Okay. Best productivity hack?
to-do lists, but write them down, cross them off. Like pen to paper is important. Mm-hmm. Also calendar blocking.
Calendar blocking is something I found out about this year and it has been a game changer for me. Literally just blocking off that time to do the things you need to do the way that you would like an actual meeting.
Actually checking your emails. Right. You need to block off time sometimes because you're going to just do it within the day or you're going to have many meetings. You won't get to things. So blocking off that time or just time to be creative, to think through things, to spend time with your family. Like you do need to block that time. It's so important.
So important. All right. Favorite date night spot.
My favorite restaurant is in the city and it's called Bar Pity. So Sunny and I love to go. It's cash only spot.
Okay.
It's amazing Italian
food.
Check
it out.
Yes.
Cool. Favorite book you've recently read?
So I'm one of those people that will read like 15 pages of many books. Yeah. So my nightstand has like 4 books on it. But right now it's The Artist's Way.
And lastly, favorite way to celebrate?
My favorite way to celebrate big is traveling.
Yes, yes. Awesome. Well, there's a lot to celebrate this year. Thank you so much, Sima. This has been such a fun conversation. Loved having you.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun.
I hope you really enjoyed following along on my conversation with Sima, and I want to share a few key takeaways with you. So Sima didn't start her business alone. She obviously had her co-founder, also her husband. When I started Briogeo, and until this day, I've actually been the sole founder of my business. And there's a lot of different ways to start a business. You can choose to take a co-founder, or you can choose not to. But whatever you decide, it's so, so important that whoever you bring on really complements your skill set. One of the things that Sima said is that you don't want someone tripping over you because they're doing the same thing. So whether you're thinking about bringing on a co-founder or maybe even building out your team, make sure you surround yourself with people that can enhance what you do and that are actually going to bring new skills and ideas to the table. So Sima shared with us that when she started her company, she had absolutely no experience in the floral industry. And the same thing is true for me. When I started Briogeo, I wasn't a hairstylist, I wasn't a chemist, I had never worked in beauty before. But the similarity that Sima and I share is that we are so, so passionate about the industry that we're in. And I think that it's so important. It really doesn't matter if you don't have prior experience, but you have to really love what you're doing because it's gonna be a lot of work to research and figure it out and navigate all the challenges. So make sure that even if you have no experience at all, you're picking something that you genuinely have a passion and interest in. So the last point that I wanna touch on is health and wellness. I tell every single entrepreneur that you have to invest in your well-being. As entrepreneurs, we spend so much time in our business, heads down, at our desks. And to really recharge and to maintain that creativity and focus over time, you have to make sure that you're prioritizing our wellness. And Sima shared with us that that's something that she does, whether it's Pilates or going for walks. Find whatever your thing is and make sure that you're prioritizing your own health and well-being just as much as you are with your business. So those were just a few of some of the key takeaways from my conversation with Sima. And I always get so much value from all of these conversations, and I really hope you did too. If you'd like to stay connected with Sima and Venus A. Fleur, check out venusafleur.com and follow Sima on Instagram at Sima Bansal Shada and at Venus A. Fleur. And don't forget to subscribe to this series, leave a review, and share your favorite episodes with your community. Follow us at Makers Mindset Podcast on Instagram and at The Makers Mindset on TikTok and YouTube. And you can also follow me directly at Nancy Twine on Instagram and learn more from me at nancytwine.com. Let me know your thoughts, questions, and ideas for future Makers Mindset episodes. Thanks so much for tuning in.